Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Probably should have started the show Let's see. I probably should have started it. Be something to do with Bruce Springsteen, that's for sure, because we're going to talk about him here in a second. Because before I even got going this morning, Tim Lynch blows up my phone, and he was listening to the interview I did with Tim yesterday. And we were talking about I know, Mac, pay attention to what you're doing. I'm looking for a song. I'm kind of screwing this thing up. Here he is. What song would I play? Yeah, he and Ed Sheeran duel it out for my favorite artist. And there's a whole variety of his music that I like. And listen to this. It's called If I Should Fall Behind. I think there's two versions of it. That's one version. Then I think there's an acoustic version. We say that's not it.
We say we'd walk together, baby, come what may. That come the twilight, should we lose our way? As we're walking, a hand should slip free. I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. We swore we'd travel.
Yeah, I like, anyway. I'm a big fan of this song. A song called Nothing Man. It's about a cop who shoots somebody, I think. and his whole life changes, and everything around him is the same, and he changes, but nobody really knows it, right? It's called Nothing Man. I think he's one of the great poets of our time. Disguises his poetry and musical lyrics.
In my hometown paper, how my brave young life was forever changed in a misty cloud of pink vapor. Darling, give me your kiss. Only understand I am the nothing.
I've had a deep morning this morning. I was up at 5. I was up before that. I read Tim's text message. He said, hey, the reason Springsteen played for 3.5 hours was because it's the only time he didn't feel depressed. And that's what drove the length of the shows. You know, he played till he couldn't play anymore or till his bandmates couldn't play anymore. And then Tim made, he said, I heard that on a Rogan podcast. So it's obviously true. And then he talks about Tim lives in Texas and knows where China Grove is. And I didn't even know that was a place till Tim yesterday in the interview. Yesterday, he talks about it. And which is kind of funny. But Tim... My roommate, who was on yesterday, if you haven't listened to that interview, listen to it. And post-traumatic winning is a function of me listening. In fact, yesterday I was supposed to do an interview with the National Museum of the Marine Corps. They're what are called docents. Now, I don't really know what a docent is, but it's kind of like a guide, okay? So I'm bombing along doing interviewing Tim, and the interview's gone for about 1 hour and 25 minutes, and I see this reminder in Outlook, and I'm like, what is that? I don't really know. And it's stupid because I have the thing here in my calendar, and I just click on it. It's like, and it's supposed to happen at 10:30, and it's 10:31, and Tim and I are talking, and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be someplace else. I'm supposed to be done by now. So anyway, I drop anchor. I say, okay, now we're going to do a part 2 to this. So I kind of like slimed out of there, right? So then I hop on to this call with all these people that work at the National Museum of the Marine Corps. And it was awesome. It was supposed to go for 1 hour, went for 2 hours. And I had an incredible time and how interested they were in post-traumatic winning. And I told them, I said, hey, post-traumatic winning belongs in the museum. I should have an office there because, you know, they're going to open up their Iraq and Afghanistan exhibits, and they think that they're going to have more people get triggered because of the realism of the things that they produce there. You know, what better tool than to have this culture of Marines reach out to Marines at the museum? I said, come on, you know it's true. It belongs there. This is our history. I'm just a chronicler of this. And they're like, oh my God. And they're so it's a Zoom call with all these people. And they're shaking their heads like, yeah, you're right. So just had a wonderful time doing that, talking about mental health and my experiences and my observations and how this thing has become what it's become. So anyway, so I had to jump off in the interview, and we'll do, you'll hear part 2 on Monday. And so But listen to it. I mean, I had no idea. My friend Tim has been sexually assaulted 3 times in his life. The story is incredible. And then for decades, right, he acts it out with booze and his anger and, you know, other destructive behavior, which is, again, typical. So it got me to thinking. And then, so after I get this text message, I call. It's 5:05, and so I know Tim. He's 2 hours ahead of me. So I call him up. He answers. Now, this is Tim Lynch. And I said, what are you doing? He said, work in the garden. So we start talking about Springsteen and the depression and blah, 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 blah. And so so we start to talk about that. And then I said to him, I said, hey, I've got something rattled around in my head that I want you to think about. He said, okay. Because listening to my friend Tim made me think of Tim Lynch. Why is that, Mac? Well, part of Tim Lynch's story is when he was struggling and became homeless for a time, he didn't want to tell anybody. He was ashamed of what had happened. So it's got me to think about that. Because, you know, the third commandment is trauma is trauma is trauma of post-traumatic winning. And so it doesn't matter if you've been to combat. It doesn't matter if you are a victim of sexual violence or child abuse, or you've seen somebody die in some form of accident, or you've kissed somebody goodbye that you love and had to watch them die, right? It all impacts us the same way. And that's true. That's why it's one of the commandments. It's a universal truth, in my opinion. And so, and since I wrote, since I wrote the commandments of post-traumatic winning, then it is, that's what it is. So anyway, but how you feel about your trauma is different. Okay. And so if I'm ashamed for instance, for me personally, I'm not ashamed of any of the traumatic experiences I've had in my life because, you know, I haven't precipitated them. I mean, they've happened in my life, but I didn't precipitate them. Well, what happens when you do precipitate it? What does anybody say to you? What happens when you're ashamed of it? You may not have precipitated it, but you're ashamed of it. It's not like, yeah, I got, you know, I had to kiss my mom goodbye when she died and then I watched her die, you know, of cancer or whatever, you know, or a car accident or, you know, a training accident or going to war or whatever. I mean, those are all disclosable. But what about when you've been raped? What about when you're a guy and you've been raped? Not disclosable, right? Not disclosable. So I've got to thinking about that. And then there's another one that's right next to it. What happens if you're culpable in it? What happens if, say, you were the driver of a vehicle? How do you deal with that? So to me, there's a couple of caveats to trauma is trauma is trauma. And that is if you feel ashamed. And then the second one is if you feel guilty. And what is the response to that? You know? What do you tell those people? Now, I will tell you what's interesting, and Tim said it yesterday. For decades, he's afraid of what people will say were he to disclose this. For decades. And, you know, it's his great horror in life. This thing that happened to him that he can't disclose to anybody because people will judge him. And so then what happens when he discloses it, the reaction is 180 out from what he expected. Stunningly opposite of what he expected. What did he experience? The compassion, the love, the tenderness of all these people who cared about him. What? That wasn't included in my nightmare. That's not part of it. So you can tell him that there's a path for you. And what you have to do is, so when you tell them trauma is trauma is trauma, they say, oh, okay. But here's what they think, and they don't say, I ain't fucking talking about it. Because I'm either ashamed or guilty, and I'm not going there. I can't. And that's what they say. So if you're ashamed, I mean, to me, there's a path. The people that love you will react in this way. I know, because it happens every time somebody who's quote-unquote ashamed talks about their shit. Every time. Without failure. Every time. You know, I mean, and I'm not lying. It's not like I could tell you, oh, well, yeah, every time except once when the people that, you know, he told, you know, three people that, you know, cared about him, loved him, and they, you know, they laughed, they chuckled and started busting his balls. No, I can't tell you that, because it's not part of this narrative. It's not part of this story. That doesn't happen. Right? The reaction tends to be stunned that this happened. The next part of the reaction is sadness that you went through this on your own for such a long period of time. I would have loved to have helped you. Right? So that's with people that are ashamed. What about people that are guilty? It was partly my fault. I was the one that was driving. What do you say to them? Because you can't take that burden from them. And so, if you have thoughts on that, I would be curious. Here's what I think. The only thing you can tell them is the truth. The power of the truth, as Matt Kuiker talks about, when he looked up at me and said, does it ever stop hurting? And I said, no, never. That honesty opens other doors for you to have another conversation, because it's the truth. And people want to talk about people that aren't afraid to go there. And I think that if you say, you know, if you say, yeah, it was my fault, and then were it in my power, I would absolutely change places, but I can't. So what is left for you? Solitude, isolation, and guilt? I don't think so. I think there's a better path. The only path that is left for you is to devote yourself for the rest of your life to that which has so impacted your life. And in that way, you're doing as good as you can do with it. And that's the only way you get it to good. So it's kind of interesting story, and about Springsteen, and then related to Tim. But listen to this. I'm gonna start this song again, and I want to make a comment about something that occurs to me as he's singing. So again, you know, he sings about being in his hometown newspaper. He sings that his life changes in a pink cloud of vapor. Read gunshot, right when it hits somebody's body. And then he says, I need your kiss. So I want to make a point about it, because I haven't listened to the song in a while. And I certainly haven't listened to the song when I was thinking about this. So this is called Nothing Man.
I don't remember how I thought I'd live to read about myself in my hometown paper, how my brave young life was forever changed in a mystic light of pink vapor. Darling, give me your kiss. Only understand I am nothing.
So, in my opinion, when he says, give me your kiss, one of the things I've learned is that if human beings need intimacy in life, you need it more after you go through traumatic things. You need to feel close to people. So it's interesting. Like, of all the lyrics he could write, he would write that. Right, everybody.
Everybody acts like nothing.
Everybody acts like nothing's changed, but he has.
Friday night, club meets at Al's barbecue. The sky's still. Same unbelievable blue. Darling, give me your kiss. Come in, take my hand. I am the nothing man.
You know, and that need is intense, right? But the problem with trauma and the way we cope with it is until you open up and allow people in there, they can't come in there.
You can call me Joe. Buy me a drink and shake my hand. You won't curse. I show you courage you can understand. Pearl and silver.
Pearl and silver is his pistol.
Resting on my night table. It's just me, Lord. I pray that I'm able. Darling, with this kid. Say you understand I am the nothing.
You know, and I remember I first heard that song and it didn't, you know, it's called Nothing Man. And then I went to Iraq and I came home and I heard it again sometime and I heard it different. So how life changes you. So, yeah. So I think my I will tell you, I have these really interesting discussions with different people this morning with Tim Lynch, and based on you know pondering, you know, how people do this stuff, how they get through it. And the different layers of it as you kind of move the kaleidoscope and consider it from a direction that maybe you didn't really consider it from before. And so in that way, post-traumatic winning becomes broader and it becomes deeper. And, you know, just that understanding that trauma is trauma is trauma. Okay, yeah, that's its impact. But what about the way you feel about it? What about the concepts of shame and guilt, which put me further and deeper into the basement? So, anyway, interesting discussion this morning with Tim Lynch, and so we'll probably talk about that a little bit. Get their thoughts on trauma and shame and trauma and guilt, and so we'll do that with Lynch. Kenny and Costantini in about 40 minutes. And then, but the first thing we'll talk about is the landing at Incheon. Now, it just came up because it's the anniversary here. And it's one of the most incredible, you know, it's one of the most incredible feats of arms, certainly in Marine Corps history, right? And if you look it up, right, they talk about these 30-foot tides. They talk about these 30-foot tides at Incheon. Now, I've never heard of such a thing. You know, you go down the beach, you know, high tide, low tide, you know, and the surf conditions, blah, 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 blah. You know, 30-foot tides. It's, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, and it was precisely for that reason General MacArthur wanted to go there. And, but Incheon is built in this tidal basin. And so, and then what they've done since the Korean War is they've created this series of locks so they can control the water. And because the way the port would operate was the ships would anchor outside of the harbor, and then these, you know, these kind of they're called lighters, but ships would pull up, and they would they'd pull up next to the ship, offload to that, and then those would go into shallow water and be functional. So the harbors change, right? The harbors change. So, and again, the risk of getting stuck in the mud by a 30-foot drop in the tide. So anyway, we'll talk about that today. So good morning. Oh, and my... the studio continues. Yeah, I was actually I'm more than geeked about it because it's starting to look like what I want it to look like. The drywall's up, and I'm in the process of taping and putting joint compound on, and you know, fixing all the blemishes and all that kind of stuff, and then paint it, and then put down some kind of cheap simulated wood floor. And it's done. So I would think by Saturday it'll be done, and you know, maybe by tomorrow. So that's pretty exciting stuff. And actually, the exciting part is doing the content that, you know, I fought to get this thing to a wider place, and the wider place is YouTube, right? Hello. And so, but it's been cool. I got up at 5. I'm talking to Tim this morning, and I get dressed and I go out in the garage and start working in my garage, cleaning my garage, reorganizing the garage to create more space for the studio piece of it. Because when, you know, you have a space that you would shoot in, right? And this is going to be like an L. So it's being 90 degrees. So, things you try to do in a studio like this is have enough depth so that there's a cool looking background, and so that, but you're far enough away from it, so it, the background would be blurred a little bit. Yeah. Artistic stuff kind of thing. Anyway. And then if you want to, you can go back further and shoot back there anyway. But so doing that, has all been cool, but you need kind of artistic spaces. Where, you know, really artistic space, a table that would sit adjacent to the camera that you're shooting with, and it would have a large monitor on it so you can see the shot as you're filming it. And so, yeah, stuff like that. So we organized the garage a little bit, you know, put some stuff outside in the backyard. And, yeah, exciting stuff. So So yeah, so on a Thursday, welcome to Almarine Radio. Today, if you don't know, is the bloodiest day, the bloodiest single day in American military history. And that is the Battle of Antietam. Right? 150 years ago today, Union and Confederate troops. No, it's not. This says 150. That isn't right. This is in 2012. So it's 158 years ago today. Union and Confederate troops clashed at the crossroad town of Sharpsburg, Maryland. So to the south, it's known as the Battle of Sharpsburg, which is the city. To the north, which wrote the history, it's the Battle of Antietam, which is the creek. It remains the single bloodiest day in American history. 23,000 men killed or wounded in the woods, the cornfields, and dirt roads. And the battle changed the course of the Civil War. I don't know if that's true. But it's an interesting battle. And when we were at IOC, we went up and got the guy who wrote the U.S. Army War College. If you go to Gettysburg, if you go to Vicksburg, if you go to Antietam, Sharpsburg, if you go to those about Fredericksburg, there's a guy who was an instructor at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. His name was Jay Luboss. And Jay Luboss writes these books that are the battlefield guide to whatever. And he wrote these things. So General Kelly, Major Kelly at the time, he gets Jay Luboss to come down and do this battlefield battlefield visit to look at major decisions on the battlefield with us. And so it's me. Lieutenant General Craparata is a captain then. Lieutenant General, recently retired, Jody Osterman is a captain then. Stacy Clarity, Lieutenant General type, he's a general officer then. Kelly, who would be a force officer. So we go, we roll up to Antietam. And we go through with the guy who wrote the Army War College Guide. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. Jay Luboss was was born to Norwegian immigrant parents, grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania. His father taught music at Allegheny College. Luboss served in the Navy from 1945 to 46, received a PhD in history from Duke. He died in 2009. From complications of Alzheimer's. He is interred in Evergreen Cemetery in Gettysburg. How cool is that? So, yeah, if you go to those battlefields now, you'll see those books. And you could take the book, and it tells you, go to this spot and stand there. And then he kind of articulates what happened in the battle. There's pictures, there's text and quotes and things like that. So long before the age of digital stuff, now you could download the app and pay to download the tour probably, and you have video and audio and all kinds of stuff. But back in the day when you only had books, and this is what I loved about him, Luboss argued that the primary value was not merely just learning history, but also a grasp of trends and meanings of ideas. History should not be subjected to the idea that it repeats itself. An unreasonable process that forces historical evidence into convenient patterns. Rather, the study of history, military history in particular, helps to illustrate points of leadership and doctrine. In his 1985 essay, Lubos maintained that the best people to teach officers were civilian historians, although others promoted a modified view that a faculty of military historians should be tempered with professional soldiers. No, it was just a it was an awesome day. But 158 years ago, on September 17th of 1862, the Union Army under George Meade and the Confederate Army, no, I'm sorry, George Meade, under McClellan, and McClellan will get fired, and the Confederate Army underneath Robert E. Lee, Tangle, Lee defends, and McClellan attacks him. Lee defends. It's kind of an interesting little sidebar here. Lee is this stately gentleman, but in his head, he's like the most shit-talking, cockiest guy in the world. He's not afraid of the Union Army. Probably, and he knows these guys, so maybe not afraid of them for good reason. He knows the caliber of officer they have. And in 1862, the Union Army was not very good. And so Lee takes the Army of Northern Virginia at Antietam or Sharpsburg, whichever you prefer, and he defends with his back to a river. Now, if he loses, his army gets annihilated. He has a river behind, he has a creek behind him. It's not really a creek, but it's, you know. And if you go to the Battle of Sharpsburg, and you look at a map, look at the, which river is it? It's the Potomac River that's behind him. So Antietam Creek's in front of him, and the Potomac River is behind him. And Lee defends like that. And they put an ass whooping. but it's not a rout. So, and the rest of the story is, because it's not a rout, Lincoln calls it a victory and issues the Emancipation Proclamation. How about that? Yeah, a little bit of politics and war there, right? So yeah, if you look at the battlefield, it's pretty interesting the things that come out of Antietam. Sharpsburg, Maryland. That's what if you're looking for if you're looking for it on Google Earth, that's what you want to look for. And if you just look at the terrain, it's when you're standing there. And so we're standing around these maps. I had made the maps. What a dork. So if you look at Sharpsburg on the map, you know, you'll find the city. It's a small town. It's a small, cool town. And then to the east of the town, you'll see the you'll see Antietam Creek. So and then to the west is the Potomac River. So if there's two fording sites. There's two fording sites. And so, so if Lee gets caught in that, no bueno, man. The Army of Northern Virginia. But that's how cocky he is. He's sure that he's going to kick their, ass. And it's, the fighting is, and And interestingly enough, the fighting at this point in the Civil War, it's not till the latter part of the Civil War that the tactics catch up with the weapons. Because what you have is you have, this might be too much of the weeds for people who don't give a shit about this kind of stuff, but you have close order tactics, right? Napoleonic tactics. You know, you have organizations of, you know, men lined up and they're an arm's length apart and they're marching around the battlefield like that. Well, those tactics were, you know, effective and probably appropriate when you shot with muskets. Okay, muskets are smooth bore, long barreled weapons. Well, what changes before the Civil War is a thing called the rifle. And the rifle has rifling grooves in the chamber that spin the round and make it incredibly more accurate. So these formations that you could be in when people were shooting musket balls that went everywhere become death traps in the Civil War. And the casualty counts. The artillery now has rifling as well. And so pretty amazing. And it takes a number of years before a guy named Emory Upton, I think it's Spotsylvania, spreads all of his soldiers out. And everybody's like, what just happened? We didn't take nearly the amount of casualties and we won. What did Upton do? It was called open order tactics. So anyway, a whole slew of interesting things. But one of the reasons why Antietam-Sharpsburg is such a deadly event is the lethality of Civil War weapons had increased and the tactics had not. But we're standing around this map, lest I forget. We're standing around this map, and Luvas starts to give us the nickel tour that he gives everybody. But we had done a ton of reading about it. And so I'm like, uh-oh. I got to ask him a question that lets him know that we know more about this than he thinks. So we're standing around listening to him. And I said, hey, sir, I have a question for you. And he said, sure. He said, I said, Mac? He said, sure, Mac. And I said, what is it about Robert E. Lee that most of us don't understand that would have him defend with the Army of Northern Virginia with, you know, both flanks pinned against the Potomac and one or two fording sites at the most to his rear? And he looks around and he says, does everybody understand that question? And everybody nods their head. And he looks and he says, I'll never forget this. He said, boys, this is going to be a fun day. And he said, okay, let's talk about this stuff. You guys have obviously done a lot of reading. And we all nod our head, yep. And he got very animated and started talking in detail about it. It was just a wonderful day. We went up and had lunch, I think somewhere in the south, in a place called South Mountain that overlooks the valley. And just beautiful, the Shenandoah Valley. And you're there, it was just a great day, a professional military education day. So anyway, so on this day that we go from Springsteen, depression, guilt and shame to the Battle of Antietam. Good morning to you. Welcome to All Marine Radio. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning to you. We'll be right back. And this is dedicated to everybody out there that is in one of those groups that you struggle with your own shame in terms of a traumatic experience that you've had, or that you struggle with your own guilt. If you feel shame, then I can tell you for a fact that my experience, 100% of it, is when you talk about whatever you hide away, you will be met with compassion and love and caring that will certainly make you cry. To those of you who live with guilt, there is only one path, and that is the path of selflessness and giving and doing the best you can to rectify a mistake that you really can never rectify. The only thing you can do is do the best you can. And those are the two on-ramps for you specifically onto the path of post-traumatic winning. So, it's in the last 24 hours, my thoughts about that stuff is they've weighed on me as I thought about my friend Tim, and for decades, you know, I can't talk about this. I mean, what would people say? What would people think about me? And to roll around with that burden by yourself, that's rough. That's rough. So this is dedicated to anybody in that group. God bless you. There's a path for you. I know there is. I've seen it. So don't be afraid to walk it.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
All right, time for us to check the weather. Cloudy and 70 in Quantico. It is raining. Camp Lejeune. I haven't seen that in the forecast anywhere for a while. Camp Lejeune's got 3 weather alerts, so you know we got to go there. Raining and 75 degrees. flash flood watch in effect until Friday at 11. A gale watch from Saturday till Monday. A small craft advisory until Saturday. So, the weather in the vicinity of Jacksonville, North Carolina. Further west, out to Marine Corps Base 29 Palms, sunny and 81 right now. Camp Pendleton, sun and 73. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 72. Okinawa, dark cloudy and 83. I think if we do Darwin, it's too close, right? Hawaii, Okinawa, Darwin. But we are pivoting to the Pacific, so... Cloudy in 81 and dark in Darwin in the Northern Territory of Australia. Continent of convicts. That's right. And partly sunny in 61 in Oslo, Norway. So that is a look at your weather here. We will we won't take a break because I've run my yap. And we'll take a break. I'll do some news headlines. We'll take a break. And then the Mensa brothers will join us. And you got that going for you this morning. The top story in Stars and Stripes is... Here's where Trump and Biden stand on issues most important to the troops and veterans. Okay, I'm not the president's biggest fan. And honestly, I don't care if, as a human being, you're kind of a piece of shit, which I think he is. I care if, my own personal opinion, I care about what your policies are. He's getting us out of Iraq and Afghanistan, period. He hasn't started any wars in 4 years. He understands the economy. And he was doing pretty good till this COVID thing happened. I look at Joe Biden, as William Gates said, he's been on the wrong side of every important foreign policy decision for the last 40 years. They had 8 years... This racial thing that supposedly is rampant in our country, and I don't think it is, but anyway, that's the narrative that you're asked to believe. We elected a black guy twice. Fastest growing demographic in the census is mixed race families. Systemic racism, maybe not so much. Anyway, so what's Joe Biden going to do other than not be Donald Trump? Now, I know if you hate Donald Trump, then people say, oh, Trump. And here's what I say. He didn't do what George Bush did. Hadn't started any wars. Didn't do what Barack Obama did, which is, essentially mark time and screw up wars, prolong them, in my opinion. Didn't do that. So you're pissed because he's a piece of shit? Well, if you knew the personal habits of most of our presidents, guess what? You'd probably come to the conclusion that although has some qualities, kind of a piece of shit in terms of a career politician and what they've done to get there. How many relative to his comments to the military? Do the Kennedys serve? No. You want to know how you know that? Because there'd be a huge story if they served in the military, right? Military service is for a small fraction of the population and certainly not for the ruling class. So Donald Trump alone in that opinion that, only people who can't get jobs join the military. If that's true. So, to me, it's, look, I don't care if you're a piece of shit. Don't start wars. don't destabilize the planet, get the economy going, and fight for the middle class of this country. If you'll do that. Joe Biden, it's just like, what is that guy going to do? And honestly, you watch him, I don't think, Trump's an asshole, but Biden's elevator, man, that thing doesn't go to the top. If you put him out in front of reporters unscripted, yeah, you'd hear some shit. National Guard whistleblower says feds considered using a heat ray on D.C. protesters. A military whistleblower says federal officials sought some unusual crowd control devices to deal with protesters outside the White House in June. Now, you know what? Here's one thing that pisses me off about shit like this. So, I mean, did somebody bring the issue up? Hey, would it be applicable to use this? National Guard Major Adam DeMarco testifies during a House Natural Resource Committee hearing. What? On actions taken on 1 June. So now we're sitting around and we're discussing things. And now, well, I better not say anything because that's going to wind up in print someplace. In written responses to questions from a House committee, National Guard Major Adam DeMarco said the Defense Department's leading military police officer for the National Capital Region sent an email asking if the D.C. National Guard possessed a long-range acoustic device used to transmit loud noises or an active denial system, the so-called heat ray. So it's not a heat ray. This is so bullshit. It's not even a heat ray, so an Associated Press story. In fact, there was a guy that was working on this when we were all at the basic school. And I'll ask any of these guys that come on in a few minutes if they remember. Franz Geil, who's like, he's like the Emmett Brown of the Marine Corps when we were captains, right? His nickname was Turd because he low crawled through somebody's dump. And then he didn't see it. Was low crawling as he led a patrol and then like had it all over his uniform and got on the radio and said, hey, I need somebody to come get me. Why? What's going on? And he made the mistake of not lying about it and saying it over the air. And we all heard. You did what? Yeah, I crawled through shit and I smell horribly. There's a lot of things I can endure. I'm not going to subject the lieutenants or myself to this. Somebody's got to come get me. So his nickname was Turd. Anyway, he had an acoustic device that he was working on. And so Paul Kennedy, who retired as a major general, right? He was, Paul was like interested in shit, right? So he would go. So he becomes friends with Franz and he's talking to Franz about these things. Less than lethal means, right? So Franz says, well, I have this acoustic thing that I'm working on. He goes, do you want to come experience it? And Paul's like, what do you mean? Like, well, I'll shoot you with it. He's like, well, is it going to kill me or anything? No. So he does it. He actually did it. He said, knock me to my knees. Right? So this heat wave. So when you see the headline, right? Heat ray. What do you picture? Right? This laser. And we're going to melt these protesters. Good God. That's why the news is bullshit, man. All the news that's fit to click on. That's what it should be. Security and conduct concerns cloud TikTok app's future with U.S. service members. Nice. Army launches probe. Colleen loves TikTok. The Chinese have all her shit. Yeah. The Army's launching a probe as three coronavirus cases are connected to Edelweiss quarantine violation. I think that's in Germany, right? Air Force postpones fitness tests for another 3 months because of the pandemic. Bad message, man. Improvise, adapt, and overcome. Yeah, there's this headline that pisses me off. It says, Marines make excellent soldiers. Yeah, like half of a tank company, reserve tank company, that just got done away with by the Marine Corps. Yeah, they joined the Army. Top stories in Wall Street Journal. TikTok owner says China must also approve the Oracle deal. Oh, that muddies the water a little bit. Stand by for TikTok to get banned in the United States. China, once Germany's partner in growth, turns into a rival. Yeah, China, Germany, not so much anymore. Airlines are about to just... they're making a final plea for aid before they have to just hack into their... and let me tell you, that's just the first one. Education's going to get a haircut, and not a trim either. Yeah, like just around the ears and off the neck. Yeah, we ain't talking about that. We're talking about a haircut. With that device. Top story in USNI News. I'm a huge fan of USNI News because they do actual news. There's a report. Complete command probe into the USS Theodore Roosevelt COVID outbreak. Next story. Esper opens door to boosting Navy's shipbuilding budget to fund future force structure. That is interesting. And then top story, Marine Corps Times, is nothing I would bother you with today in Marine Corps Times. Sorry about that. And then top five stories in Early Bird real quick, and then we'll get the Mensa brothers on. One, Trump-Biden offer detailed breakdown of their military and veterans plans. Save the world. Number two, Air Force extends COVID-driven fitness test suspension to January. Waist measurements have been nixed. Whew, thank God for that, right? Number three, U.S. military. We cannot find a way to take a physical fitness test. And you're going to fight the Chinese. You're going to take on the heavy World War II type casualties. And you can't figure out how to take a fucking PFT? Give me a break. U.S. military peeks into the future. It sees most daunting threat, China. Well, no shit, man. Number four, 29-year-old Marine is dying of a rare brain cancer. Burn pits caused it, according to his family. Number five, former Missile Defense Agency chief harassed female employees for 7 years, according to the Inspector General of the Defense Department. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the Mensa brothers join us, and we'll talk about Antietam. Well, we're going to talk about Inchon first, then we'll talk about Antietam, then we'll probably talk about depression. We'll talk about trauma. But factor in shame and guilt in there and get their thoughts on that. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial because you don't want to miss this. So one of my favorite commercials happens right now.